primary passages to consider. 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 7. We certainly will need to be very familiar with this one going forward. This is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, who is elsewhere described as an elder, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach in the snare of the devil. Then over in Titus chapter 1, we have some qualifications given here. Some repeat the ones in the previous passage, but there are some ones that are a little bit different. Titus 1, beginning in verse 5. For this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking, and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. If a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination, for a bishop, notice how elder and bishop are used interchangeably, for a bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but hospitable, a lover of what is good, sober-minded, just, holy, self-controlled, holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able, by sound doctrine, both to exhort and convict those who contradict. Now, those are two passages that explicitly give qualifications for elders. And so, the temptation would be to think, okay, well, this will be easy. All I got to know is two passages. There are qualifications given in these two passages. I'll find some men who fit these, and then we'll just be moving forward. But it's not quite as simple as that, I don't believe. When looking for men to serve, we're really going to have to look at a number of different things, and we'll talk some more about that in just a minute, and a number of different passages. We're going to explain why, in just a minute, we can't just use 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1. There are other passages that bear on this same subject. Now, what this lesson is going to do is just sort of present an overview of what we're looking for. There will be some things that we'll cover in this lesson today, and you'll say, well, man, he sure didn't go into much detail on that. Well, that's going to be by design. This lesson is just to sort of get us oriented toward thinking about the kind of men that we're looking for. We'll go into more detail as we proceed with some other lessons. And so, first of all, I want us to understand that when we are looking for men to serve as elders, we must look at their wives. That is part of the process. Look with me in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 11. Let's go back to that passage we were reading earlier there in chapter 3. Now, the qualifications for elders ended there in verse 7. He picks up with the qualifications for deacons in verse 8. Now, in verse 11, there's kind of a little bit of an interruption in the thought there. It says, likewise, their wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all things. Now, it is a little bit hard to tell exactly what wives or women he's specifically talking about here. Is he talking specifically about the deacons' wives? Is he referring back up to the elders, is he talking perhaps about both the elders and deacons' wives? It's a little bit hard to say for sure. But the things that he mentions there in verse 11 have to do with a woman's what? With a woman's character. And wouldn't you want a man who is going to serve as an elder for his wife to have this sort of character? Because as we'll see here in just a minute, he's to be an example to the entire flock. Do you think his wife's lack of character could impact his example to the flock? You better believe it. And so, regardless of specifically what 1 Timothy 3 and verse 11 has in mind, we do have to look at their wives. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 4 that we read just a few minutes ago talks about a man who rules his own house well. We're looking for men who have done that, who have demonstrated leadership in their home. Well, doesn't that include the wife? And really, one of the questions that I guess has to arise in all of this is, does he rule the house or does she? If she rules the house, then he's not ruling the house at all, much less ruling the house well. And if you've got a situation like that, where she rules the house, you may wind up appointing this man, but his wife's going to be really the one who's serving. She's going to kind of be serving through him. So we're going to have to be really careful about that, right? That's a legitimate question to ask. Does he rule the house or does she? One who rules his own house well. That certainly includes the children, but it also includes the wife. And then what we mentioned just a few minutes ago. Elders are taught to be examples to the flock. Well, as we've already said, if a wife's character is not what it ought to be, then it's going to greatly impact the example that he is able to be. One of the things we talked about, I don't think it was very long ago, we had a couple of lessons on 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 11. And the admonition in that passage is, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. It'd be really good if an elder's wife has already learned how to lead a quiet life. With the kind of information that elders sometimes have made available to them, if we're dealing with a slanderer, a gossiper, a backbiter, or someone that just has trouble keeping their mouth shut, we're going to have some issues. And so, again, when you look at the big picture and all these considerations brought into play, yes, we're looking for the right kind of man, but in looking for the right kind of man, we must look at his wife or their wives in the case of several. But then we also, of course, must look at their children. Back to 1 Timothy 3, 4 and 5 again, says, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. And so that brings up two questions at least to ask. And that is, do his children obey him? There's something else here too, right? Do his children respect him? And that's related, but it's a different question too, right? Do his children obey him, and do they respect him? And then over in Titus chapter 1, you'll notice there was something else said concerning children there. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 6, if a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, some translations say having believing children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination. Just about every commentary, Greek authority that I've ever consulted, just about every one of them is in agreement that the phrase here, faithful or believing children, refers to children who are Christians. And so, we can go ahead and eliminate from consideration men who have no believing children, at least at this point. If they don't have any children who are Christians, then they can't be considered, at least right now. They may very well be at a later time. And we'll talk some more about this later. I don't think that the language is such that it demands that all of them be Christians at this point. In other words, a man may have three children who have obeyed the gospel. One is too young yet, has not done that. I don't know that the language forces us to say that all of them must be. But at least there must be some in the case of men we're considering. Now, how important is it? Looking at the wives, the children, and all the various things we've talked about so far, and I know we haven't gone into much detail. Why is this so important? What does the passage say? What it says is, if a man does not know how to rule his house, how will he take care of the church of God? His ability to lead and care for others, especially in a spiritual way, has already been demonstrated in his home. That's what we're looking for. The ability to lead and to care for others in the most important ways. That's the kind of man we want being the shepherd of the flock. But then something else. We must look beyond 1 Timothy 3, 1 through 7, and also Titus 1, to their duties and to their descriptions. You see, not all of the qualifications are found right there in those two passages. Some of those qualifications are suggested by the duties that they have and the various ways in which their work is described. First of all, they're described as elders. Acts 14:23 and also Titus 1 and verse 5. Elder just means an older person, right? It doesn't fix some certain age. It has to be 45 or 50 or 60 or whatever. But the passage did tell us that we're not to think about having a novice, right? It's not a novice. It's not a new Christian. We're talking about someone who's a little older in the faith. Someone who's had an opportunity to become grounded and steadfast in the faith. And it takes a little while for that to develop, for someone's convictions to become solid, where, you know, they're not so back and forth. So we're looking for that kind of man. He's also described as a bishop or as an overseer, someone who will watch out for souls. Now, in those list of qualifications in those two passages, did you see anything said about a genuine concern for the souls of others? Did you see that in either one of those lists? I didn't see it anywhere. But we are looking for that, right? And that's suggested by their work. They're going to be watching for our souls, every last one of us. One of the things that Paul said about Timothy in Philippians chapter 2, when he was thinking about people he could send back to Philippi, he said, I've chosen Timothy because I have no one like-minded, because I know he will sincerely care for your state. That's what you're looking for. People who sincerely care for the souls of others. And again, that's suggested by their work. And we might just say that it's going to have to be someone who's demonstrated a concern for all souls. Sometimes people have kind of maybe got in a little bit of a rut, maybe not purposely, but about the only ones they have anything to do with is maybe just the ones in their family. Okay? They're not going to be just watching out for the souls of their family members. They're going to be watching out for the souls of all. And so, again, these are kind of things that we're looking for. He's also described as a pastor or a shepherd, one who will feed and protect the flock, and who will also lead by example. So that says something about their ability to teach. It says something about the strength of their convictions. Because if you appoint men who do not have strong convictions, and we are beset by false teaching, we get somebody real sly that comes in here, and maybe they've got a real loving disposition, and they know how to win friends and influence people. We have men without strong convictions, we may just get overrun by that false teaching. These are men who are looking out for wolves, and they're able to protect the flock. And so not weak or vacillating, but people with strong convictions, and certainly with strong character because they will be an example to the flock. An elder is also described as a steward, one to whom the souls of others have been entrusted. And so a legitimate question is this someone that you deem trustworthy? You say, well, how do I figure out if they're trustworthy? Well, think about jobs they've been given in the past. Think about responsibilities they've had up to this point. Have they been faithful in discharging those responsibilities? It's a pretty good indication of, okay, we've entrusted him with this. He did a great job with it. He took it seriously. But again, those are the kind of things that we're looking for. And then, of course, he's also described as a ruler who will make decisions to which others must submit. We kind of need to look sort of at both sides of this. Obviously, since elders do have to make a lot of decisions, they've got to be decisive people. And I'm not talking about people who rush to decisions. Sometimes you have to be very deliberate, obviously. But they have to be decisive. They can't just be wishy-washy all the time. You know how sometimes when you go out to eat and it's back and forth about, you know, where you want to go? I don't care. Well, why don't we go to McDonald's? I hate McDonald's. And it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Well, elders can't do that. I mean, you're talking about things that are much more important than that. They've got to be able to make a decision. But the Scriptures warn about them being lords over the flock. You think it could possibly go to someone's head that they're going to be making decisions to which others must submit? You think that could go to somebody's head? And there's a danger in that, right? Of making decisions that will benefit who? That'll benefit me. Maybe my family. Maybe particular ones that I like. And so, again, you have to be really careful. See, when you start looking at their work and the way they're described, those things suggest within themselves qualities that we're looking for in the men that we would like to appoint. But then also, we must look beyond those two passages in 1 Timothy 3 and Titus 1 to the fuller description of character found in other New Testament passages. We've kind of got a good gauge of their character, certainly, from the qualities that are mentioned in those two passages, but there are some things conspicuously absent. Like humility. Does that surprise you a little bit? Humility is not in either one of those lists. Now, you don't want to appoint a proud man, do you? You want to make sure that he's humble. And so, when you look at the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians 5, when you look at those qualities mentioned in Colossians 3, these are qualities of character that are expected of each and every faithful Christian. But especially, we want these to be manifested in the lives of people who have this very important responsibility of watching for souls. So, we know we've got to look not just at the men, but at their wives. We know we've also got to look at their children. We know that we can't just focus so much on those lists that we forget about the different ways their duties are described and their roles are described, because those suggest some qualities themselves. We've got to look at the character that's found in other passages as well, because the full definition of character is not found in those two passages. And so let's just kind of go through and look at some questions very quickly that we might ask about a person, just based on what we've seen so far. And again, we're going to go through these fast. We'll come back and talk about these in other lessons a little bit more. Is this man active in the work here? Is he zealous? And I don't mean by zeal that, you know, he's jumping up and down and just, you know, Mr. Excitement all the time. Just a consistent, solid service. You can tell that the work here means something to him, that eternal things mean something to him. What about his teaching? Does he take it seriously? Is he prepared? Does he know his material? Again, the feeding of the flock, that's a big responsibility in regard to elders. Not just the feeding that they do, but their charge over others who are doing it.
Is this the case with other public duties he performs?
Notice any flippancy? Any lack of reverence in any of the duties that he might perform? That would be a major red flag, wouldn't it? When teaching, is he a little loose with the Scriptures? Does he have a fondness for thinking outside the box? Thinking outside the box can get you a little bit of trouble, right? Especially when 2 John 1, verse 9 warns us to not go beyond the teaching of Christ. It kind of gives us a box to stay within, right? There are certain little catchphrases sometimes that people like to use who might be a little bit prone to stir up some trouble. We need to be careful about someone like that. This man needs to have demonstrated that he believes with all of his heart that we got to have authority for the things that we do. Does he make every effort to thoroughly prove his points? As we see, of course, in various scriptures. Does he complete the task he is given? This goes back kind of to that trustworthiness that we were talking about earlier. Just, again, an indication of a man's character. Does he attend services faithfully? It's almost embarrassing to ask such a question, but I've learned that you don't leave off really anything. You need to go ahead and get it out there. Is he out sometimes and you have no idea where he is? There's been no accounting given of it. Does his wife miss a lot? Do other family members miss frequently with little or no explanation? And these are things that would have a bearing, right? How well does he treat his family? Remember that passage talked about family being the training ground, right? You can tell a lot about how a man's going to rule in this area by the way he's ruled over his family members. Does he show a degree of patience with them? Is he attentive to them? Because this is going to require a lot of attention. If he hasn't been real attentive to his wife and to his children, probably not going to be real attentive to the rest of us. Does his family respect him? Is his speech holy? His behavior. Holiness is certainly one of the qualifications given there. What do we know about his viewing habits? His entertainment choices? And all that we're asking these questions for is, we can't afford a man who's got one foot in the world and one foot in the Lord. That's going to make for some difficult problems down the road, right? And like it or not, we're going to tend to sort of go in the direction of the convictions of our elders. If our elders are a little bit loose in terms of these sort of things, then that might be the direction that we eventually head in ourselves. What does he allow his children to do? Where does he allow them to go? And to what degree does this reflect his views? Well, the interesting qualifications given in the Titus 1 chapter is a lover of what is good. Think about that. A lover of what is good. Now, when you love what is good, primarily, what does that mean? You love what matters the most. You love what is eternal. You love what endures. You love the things of the Lord the most. And again, these are kind of questions to ask to sort of see, well, is that the case, or is it a little bit more in the other direction? How well does he respond to the needs of others? Hospitable is certainly one of the qualifications given there. How well does he react to criticism? Is he sensitive? Is he easily offended? I've never been an elder, but I know enough about what's involved in it from interacting with them and so forth. It's not for the faint of heart and it's not for the sensitive. And this really speaks to self-control. And that's one of the qualifications, right? If a man flies off the handle every time he's ever questioned about something, then we've got an issue. We've got an issue. Does he keep his cool during discussions? Do you know of anything that has damaged his reputation in the community? As it says, he's got to have a good report from those who are without. And just a couple of points to make here in closing. And again, this is all just to kind of orient us in the right direction, hopefully. Let's not be too stringent. making it nearly impossible for anyone to become an elder. And by that we mean possess every qualification to the absolute fullest degree. I think if we polled our three men and we asked them, do you think you could be more temperate? Is there a possibility that you could be more temperate? I suspect that all three would say, yes, I could still be more so. Could they be more hospitable? Yeah, we can always be more so, right? So, we need to be careful that we're not looking for these qualities in the absolute or to the absolute nth degree. But then let's make sure that we don't go in the other direction either. Let's not become too lax. We're not interested in watering these qualifications down. In other words, we can't say, I've never, ever known him to be hospitable. Never have seen any evidence of it. But he's got a lot of other good qualities. Need to be careful about, okay, looks to me like about 75% of them I can see evidence of, about 25%. No, we need to be careful about watering this down either. Really, I think if we do anything less than keep presenting the ideal, we're doing a major disservice to those who might serve as elders in the future. Keep presenting the ideal. And that's going to help prospective elders on down the road become more what God would have them to be. Go ahead and get out your song book. We'll sing the song of encouragement here in just a moment. Feel almost a little bit embarrassed to say this, but as Chase has already indicated, I said something in class today about it. This is the day we celebrate in this nation as Mother's Day, and probably a lot of you are very anxious to go to your favorite eating place before everybody else gets there. But let's just relax for a minute, okay? If your soul is in danger right now, if there are things you need to do to make yourself right with God, by no means should you let any consideration keep you from taking care of that right now. I'm not the least bit concerned about us rushing anywhere if something that important needs to be done right now. So if you need to respond to the invitation in any way, let it be known as we stand and sing.